Gal.
KG, how are you? It's been a long time since we spoke.
Good to speak to you again.
I'm glad you're doing well.
Thank you so much. I hope you're doing well as well.
I am. And you know what? Today might be the weirdest interview that you might have.
Oh, okay. Really?
So just be prepared for that.
All right, I'm ready.
You already know how it is. So it's like what, 10 o'clock in California at the moment?
Yeah, it's 10:12.
Okay. So what did you have for breakfast, KG? I want to know. Yeah.
I rolled out of bed. I had like a cup of tea and a coffee. That's my breakfast, right? So I'll have breakfast after this.
Oh, okay. So when are you going to expect to finish this? How many more people you have to see?
I think you're the final one before 4 o'clock. So at four, I'll pick this up again, but I get breakfast right after this.
So. Okay. So then I better be quick so you can go and eat. Is that what it is?
No worries. Thank you.
Time. Okay, so also coffee and tea. That's a lot of caffeine, KG.
I tried to go to sleep early last night and it didn't work out very well, so I ended up going to bed around 5, which explains the tea and coffee.
Oh, okay, perfect. I don't know if anyone else cares, but I had some Lucky Charms literally 5 minutes before the recording.
You know, Lucky Charms is one of those cereals that make the milk taste the best afterwards. Like, I don't know about you, but like,
yeah.
Fruity Pebbles and Lucky Charms are my preferred like milk soaky cereals.
So. They're good, aren't they? What I hate about Lucky Charms is that sometimes, especially if you live in a big household, your siblings will get in and eat all the marshmallows before you.
And just leave you the gross bits.
It's a trail.
It's like a knife in the back.
I know. But we're not here to talk about Lucky Charms or anything like that. We're here to talk about Jujutsu Kaisen Zero. I didn't know this, KG, but you're the voice of Gojo. How did I not realize? How did you get that role?
I read for it. They sent it to me. I was already familiar with the studio that was dubbing the show. I'm already on their audition list. So yeah, I just got the audition. I read for it. They liked it. And then after I booked the job, I read a bunch of the manga and I became a giant fan.
Great. Have you seen the film so far? I'm guessing you have.
Yes, I've seen the film. It's beautiful. I really, really like the action scenes and the soundtrack is mind blowing. So I'm really looking forward to like sitting down in a theater and enjoying that. And of course the animation is beautiful as usual. MAPPA is just knocking it out of the park these past few years. You
know? It is exciting. We saw the film together and then we're actually going to go and see it tomorrow in London.
Nice.
But I wanted to know, when you go and watch the film in theaters, what are your preferred snacks? What do you bring with you in the theater? What do you buy from the theater?
Okay, I'm classically a hot dog man. Okay. Two hot dogs, specifically two. Because one is just, you know, you eat the one at the beginning and then you're like, well, I got nothing for the rest of the film, you know, like I'm just stuck. So you always bring two, one for the beginning and one for like part way when you're like, oh man, it's getting to the good part. Hold on. I need to consume something, you know, so there's a strategy to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Two hot dogs is my go-to.
Two hot dogs. What'd you put on the hot dogs?
You know, it's like, there's only so many things at the movie theater. I'm usually a mustard and sauerkraut man. So I'll make do at the theater because usually they don't have sauerkraut. They'll have like the little pickles or whatever. So mustard and that.
What I'm going to be bringing tomorrow is some gummy worms. That's what I've decided. Yeah, I went to Costco because we're talking about hot dogs. I went to Costco. They didn't have any hot dogs because of Brexit. I don't know. We're suffering. But that's not the point. One thing I wanted to know, because obviously you voiced Gojo. As Gojo, because you're going to be speaking on behalf of Gojo, but who's your favorite character apart from Gojo in Jujutsu Kaisen?
My favorite character in general, that's tough. There's a bunch of really good ones I love. Gato, Suguru Gato is a really great character. I think this movie does him a lot of justice by going into his background and sort of letting the audience sort of understand where he's coming from as the quote-unquote villain of the show, right? And the movie. I think Yuta's really cool. I think Rika specifically, I really love because it's almost like the Ring Girl thing, you know? And I love like Japanese horror. So just being able to see like the sort of like Japanese horror monster as the protagonist is just really delightful. That's one of my favorite parts of the film.
You know what? I agree with you, but those Yuta and Rika scenes killed me. I was watching it on my tablet and it was just like tears everywhere. I could not handle it.
It's pretty sad.
It's so sad.
most Romeo and Juliet feel. I mean, that story's not feel good anyway, but like, it's not the most, you know, like endearing romance story ever. But you know, there's romance.
You know
involved.
What, KG? I would disagree with you because
You think it's the most like romantic thing ever?
I was watching this film and I was like, you know, this is more of a romantic film than it is a shonen. And I can appreciate it for that. And you know what? I was impressed by that. Bravo.
It is a certain type of romance. You're right. Mm. A certain type of romance certainly happens in the film.
Definitely. We can't spoil it, of course. But,
of course.
One thing that I wanted to know, because I'm noticing your tattoos. And last time we had you on, you mentioned that every major role, you get the name tattooed. Did you get one for Gojo?
So a few years ago, I had to stop because I'm trying to, you know, I got married since the last time we spoke. And now I'm trying to be more fiscally responsible. We're trying to, you know, get a new place. So the tattoos have had to take a temporary backseat to, you know, just domestic life, as it were. If I ever get into a more comfortable place, absolutely, I'm getting some sort of Gojo tattoo. 100%.
Hopefully you do. One other thing I just wanted to know, like I mentioned at the beginning, I didn't even know you were in this film at all until I saw the press release. And then even then, I didn't even realize until I heard your voice, but it took me a while. So we know Gojo to be kind of, you know, he can be goofy at times with his students, but at the same time, he can be quite stern, especially with the higher ups. How do you find that to jump between one and the other? Is that difficult for you or did you find any challenges with that?
I actually prefer that a character has an emotional range because we as people in real life have emotional ranges, right? And many times in anime or cartoons or video games, when you're performing a either like incidental or like walk-on character or like just a character that has one scene, usually they try to keep you within a certain like emotional frame so that the character comes across very clear. It's like this character is this type of character, you know? With Gojo, he doesn't have that emotional restriction because he has a very childlike sense of the world almost because of the circumstances of his birth, and he's never really had to grow beyond a certain point emotionally. He's very childlike, so it's almost like a breath of fresh air to be able to hit vastly different emotional beats with him. He can be funny, he can be serious, he can be dangerous, he can be like, you know, like silly, weird, just like a normal person. So it's not so much about like a challenge of going to different places. It's just keeping in mind to allow the character to live in truth. And when Gojo lives in truth, it's easy. It's, you know, he's just reacting earnestly to stuff, you know, with his little Gojo attitude on life. So no, I wouldn't say it was a challenge. I would say it was very free, to be honest.
Awesome. Also on the topic of Gojo, who or what were your inspirations when coming up with Gojo's voice? Because I've noticed at times it can be very similar to your own voice, but obviously other times he switches to a different level. So what were your inspirations?
Honestly, the inspirations mostly come from reading the manga. So like I did a pretty deep dive research wise into the character before I started. And I pulled a little bit from some other characters I voiced that were similar to him to get a like a skeleton of the personality out. For example, in a show called Bungo Stray Dogs, I voiced a character named Osamu Dazai, who is very close emotional spectrum wise to Gojo. So I use Dazai as a starting off point, but of course Gojo has a very, you know, singular, unique kind of life experience. So using like a skeleton of a character, you can sort of flesh it out depending on what you learn about the character's history and his relationships. And that naturally forms a different character than any sort of foundational character you use. And I that happened with Gojo as we continued along the show, and he sort of, you know, I sort of filled in the pieces on who this person was. He's now arrived at a very, very complex place, as he is a complex character. So I'm pretty happy with how he turned out. Yeah.
Great. I noticed that you're in, I'm guessing, a home recording studio.
Yep.
Was this dubbed from home or did you go into the studio for this one?
So generally these days we do dub most things from home. This is my whisper room right now. But for the movie, I decided to go into the studio because just for a pure like technical aspect, my room handles like combat stuff pretty well, but I didn't know how much combat stuff was going to be in the film. So I just thought, let's just play it safe and use their treated room with their microphones that they're, you know, that they know exactly how loud or you how intense you can be, instead of risking it for a big premiere like this. So for this project, I did it in studio, but for the show, I recorded in this booth.
So what's the kind of difference between the two? Because I'd imagine obviously COVID bringing its own issues, yeah, and things like that. So what is the difference between recording at home and recording in studio?
Well, recording at home, I have to worry about my own engineering a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's something called writing the gain that I have to do. So if you listen to me, I'm going to get a little softer now. That's me turning down the gain, and then I turn the gain back up. That's just like a small example of the stuff you have to do while you're recording at home. So like, let's for example say I'm doing a scene where the character goes from a very mild place, just like we're talking now, to a very loud place, right? Writing the gain means I have to talk low, and then turn the gain down while I get hotter. So these are all these things that the engineer would usually do in the studio and I don't have to worry about. But since I work at home so much, I've had to sort of teach myself to do little things like that. And that's the difference mostly.
Do you feel that can be quite stressful at sometimes, right? Or
it can be if you're really trying to like concentrate on like a dramatic thing. Like if you're, for example, if like your friend just died in a show and you're like crying and you're like, you know, at the same time you have to do this performance while like looking at your gain and making sure you're not peaking, that can be a little distracting. So it's much easier to do that kind of stuff in the studio.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions for me? I'm flipping it on you now, Casey.
How you been? How has the plague treated you?
It's been good. To be honest with you,
the plague has been good.
It's been good. Yeah, it's been good. I haven't actually caught COVID. So,
oh, good. Great. Fantastic.
You know, fingers crossed. But no, it's been good. I mean, we've been taking it quite seriously in the United Kingdom. Like for the last 2 years, it feels like we've been locked down, mm-hmm, which, you know, can be good and bad in a way, but I'm used to it because a lot of our team are all over the world. So these Zoom calls are, you know, apart from the call, you know, it's just there. But yeah, other than that, I've been really, really good. It's been weird though, because we haven't done any sort of interviews in a long time. We've just been focusing on this. And actually this podcast you're on now, this is your first appearance on that one, because it's an anime podcast.
Yeah, look at that.
So I wanted to know, what have you been doing during COVID?
Oh man, for the first year it was rough because, you know, no one in the industry knew, like in the recording industry knew what was happening. So, you know, not a lot of work was happening. We all had to do a mad dash to like upgrade our equipment at home so we can work at home. Other than that, I've memorized every wall in my house. I've lived a very boring life for the past 2 years. I wake up, I come into this cube, you know, I do my job. Maybe I'll go to a restaurant if we're feeling sassy, like a few times a month.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about it. It's this plague has hit all of us, like, and it's wrecked a lot of stuff, but you know, gotta keep going somehow.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that you've said that. We don't have much time left, KG, so I'm gonna go and ask you some really weird and wonderful questions. Yeah, what are you gonna go and eat now?
What am I gonna go and eat now?
Yeah, because you said you need to go and eat. What are you gonna eat?
I am going to make a Shanghainese peasant dish that's basically stir-fried eggs and tomatoes. It's my favorite thing to eat. It's nice. Very simple, it's delicious. You eat it with some white rice, it's great.
How long does that take you to make?
Oh, 10 minutes.
Okay. Really, so then what's the plans for the rest of the day?
Other than at 4 o'clock, we're going to come back, we're going to answer more questions. And then in there somewhere, I'm going to sneak a nap in because I only slept for like 3 hours or one or two hours last night. So yeah, sleep and food. It's going to be
food. That is a great idea. You know what? I'm going to do the same because it's
hell
like,
yeah.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. Heck yeah. Insane. I don't know if I can say hell here.
What, on this or on us? On our podcast? You can say whatever you want, KG. I'm not going to.
Oh, nice. Well, then hell yeah.
You. Hell yeah. Exactly. But yeah, that being said, thank you for coming on. You. I'm not going to take any more of your time, but it was a pleasure as always.
Absolutely. And let's hope we get to talk together again soon.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, and welcome to Get a Life Podcast Kunai. And yeah, I'm just really excited. I'm really hyped because I'm with my boy Jacob for a second time.
Hi guys, what's up? Oh my god, it's your fave. Yes.
Yeah, you know what? Speaking of favorite, I'm not gonna lie to you. Our previous episode with Jujutsu Kaisen was one of the my favorite episodes to
just
record.
Just say it was your favorite.
You know, I can't say it was my favorite.
Say it.
Until we see the
say it.
Until we see the views. So what's gonna happen is that if you want me to say that it's my favorite, then we gotta make sure that the Jujutsu Kaisen episode gets viewed a billion times. Does that sound fair?
No.
I think a billion might be a bit too much, but okay. Let's say we get a certain amount of views.
If it gets 69 views.
If it gets 60, okay. That's a bit low, but for the memes, if it gets 69 views, 426.9, okay, we'll do that. Does that sound fair?
No. Why? It's too much.
Why? Okay. Okay. If it is our most watched Kunai episode, then it will be my favorite. How about that?
Fair.
Okay. So if you guys want me to say that Jujutsu Kaisen was my favorite Kunai episode, and if you want to make Jacob happy, go and watch the previous episode that we did. Because today we are going to be talking about
Jennifer Kaisen Jujutsu Zero. Kaisen.
Jennifer Kaisen, yes. Jujutsu Kaisen Zero. Before we actually get into the discussion, just want to thank our sponsors, Japan Crate, and our headline sponsor for this episode, Crunchyroll, because without Crunchyroll, we wouldn't have been able to view the film because they gave us early screening access. So big thanks to them. If you want to support Crunchyroll, you in turn help support us as well. And I'm recording this before the early screening in cinemas, but I will be attending the early cinema release, which should be good.
I am too.
I don't know if they're gonna have sub or dub.
I am too.
Are you?
I would say
you'll be there.
I would say that if I would.
You're there in spirit.
Yeah, Jacob. I'm there in spirit. If Bish grabs me some merchandise, yeah, then I am there in spirit.
I don't even know if there's gonna be merchandise.
There
Jacob.
Will.
Why
be.
Are we talking
there
about?
There will be.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I'm manifesting it. Okay.
Even if there isn't merchandise, I promise when I get the Jennifer Kaisen t-shirts made, you're gonna get one or two.
You're just gonna steal my idea and market it. Wow.
What? That was my idea.
No, wait, it was mine.
Just for some. Okay.
I was the one who said Jennifer Kaisen, and you fucking lost your mind.
Okay, you said it on the podcast, which means it's the podcast's idea. That's how
it
works.
No, it's not how it works.
Don't at me.
No.
I was the one yesterday that made the Jennifer Kaisen logo from scratch.
I helped you with it, though.
Okay, you helped, but I did it.
And you know what else I did yesterday?
It was a group
effort.
You know
what else I did yesterday?
What
I said to stay sexy.
Yes, you did.
Exactly.
And I don't know if are you going to be doing it today as well? I don't
know.
Yeah,
why not?
We got official permission from Joe.
Yeah, we did.
You know, I know we wasted so much time yesterday getting the permission, but we've got permission from Joe this time. So there shouldn't be an issue. But before
yeah,
we
I love
get
you,
into
there
it.
There should be an issue as if it was like a fucking technical preparation of some sort.
It is. You know what? It is. Because I don't like upsetting Joe. I love
Me
Joe.
Too. Joe,
and
I love you.
I think the audience loves Joe as well. So we are not allowed to disappoint Joe.
No.
Because you know what? I miss you, Joe. I think we all miss Joe, right?
I miss Joe too.
Yeah.
I love Joe. Joe will love you.
Okay, this isn't the Joe show, okay?
It might as well be.
It might as well, but it isn't. So before we get into it,
Joe's Bizarre Show.
Let's JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
No, Joe's Bizarre Show.
Was that a JoJo's reference?
Don't ask me that.
Jotaro. Okay. Oddly enough, Joe loves JoJo. So
exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
Anyway,
I love Joe.
We all love Joe. Okay. Enough Joe talk.
No.
Let's get into the episode. For you new folks, Get Life Podcast Kunai is a monthly anime discussion podcast under the Get Life group. Due to the nature of discussion, we can't avoid spoilers of the show to be discussed. For those shows that are based off existing pieces of work, whether it's manga, light novel, or some other media form, we're not covering the source material for those. If you'd like to recommend a show for us to watch and make an episode of on Kunai, suggest on our Discord page, getlifepodcast.com/discord. Big thanks to our sponsors once more, JList, Japan Crate, and our headline sponsor for this episode, Crunchyroll. So, Jacob,
yes.
Jujutsu Kaisen
yes.
Zero, or Jennifer Kaisen Zero, is a Japanese manga series written and illustrated by Jiji Akutami, I think is his name.
Is it Jiji Akutami or is it Gege Akutami?
Okay, I think it might be Gege Akutami, but I said in the previous episode Gigi. So Gigi! Anyway, so basically it is the prequel to Jujutsu Kaisen. So it's set in 2017. I think, what year was Jujutsu Kaisen set in? Was it set in like modern time? I think it was like 2020 or
Kaisen
something like that.
Kaisen Zero was, I think it was set in 2017, if I'm correct.
But the original, like the first season of Jujutsu
Kaisen,
it was like set in 2020, right?
It must have been like Must have been love. No. I think Jujutsu Kaisen Zero, let me think. It must have been later than 2017, definitely. Because, I mean, it's Saizen. Yeah, Saizen.
Saizen, Shoujin. Was it Shoujo?
Shoujo. No, it's actually Jujutsu Kaisen, the original, is set in 2018. Like, it begins in 2018. So it's 1 year after Zero.
That was surprising. Okay, so I'm guessing because the manga was written and released in 2018, that might be why. But basically, it's set before the events of season one of Jujutsu Kaisen, and so it shares a lot of the same characters. We do see a lot of the same characters in this film, but it focuses on your main character, Yuta, which we'll get into in a little bit. Jacob, what was your first impressions? Obviously, we obviously watched the film early because of Crunchyroll and things like that, and obviously we knew about it because, well, we've seen Jujutsu Kaisen, so it's not like we're completely new to this series. But as soon as you watch the film, within the first sort of couple of minutes, like, what did you think? What was your sort of intentions? Were you excited? Were you like, oh, okay, this is different? What were you thinking as the film went on?
I was like, of course, I didn't like really know what to expect, but I remember like the first few minutes when they gang up on Yuta. I was like when Rika appeared behind him, right? I was like, I'm so glad this guy can actually defend himself. Like, I was like so happy that like you see someone getting bullied. Yeah, looking back at Junpei from Jujutsu Kaisen, who couldn't really defend himself. In this case for Yuta, I was like, oh my god, I'm so happy he can actually fuck them up. He has a way.
But he kills them.
Yeah, deservedly.
Okay.
And he pushed the bodies into the locker. I mean, Rika did, but you know.
Well, technically, if you think about it, Rika was the one that killed him as well. So
yeah,
it wasn't actually,
but, I mean,
Yuta. But still, I mean, that is pretty dark, no?
It was definitely dark, but it was also like, I mean, the guy bullying him was like, well, I'm graduating soon, so... And I was like, yeah, you just graduated. Congrats. After that happened, you would often see Yuta being, like, you know, like, very, like, insecure and stuff. And I felt kind of bad, but I also was like... Like, of course, I wanted to, like, hold him and hug him and tell him, everything is gonna be okay, baby. But I always... Mm-hmm. But it was also like, okay, maybe, like... At least try and, you know, like, get your chin up a little bit, because, like, I get that he had, like, the insecurities going on, but at the same time, it's also, like, at some point it gets a bit, you know, just a bit irritating. Not to the point where I'm like, oh my god, I want to hit him or anything, but, like, okay, get yourself together. You're in a new place. You need, like, this is about life and death, and you're cowering. Like,
okay.
I feel like I sometimes get like that when I see, like, characters are, like, you know, they're powerful, but they are, like, scared of doing anything. I feel like that's
my general.
I know
what you mean. It's that sort of shonen trope in which you either have the hero that wants to be a hero, right?
Yeah,
that wants
exactly.
to help people, or you have the hero that basically doesn't want to be in that position. And it's sort of like, if you want to compare characters, you know, Yuji's that guy that wants to help everyone. Yuta basically was very reluctant from the beginning. He didn't want to join Jujutsu High. He wanted to kill himself, first of all.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want to harm people.
Exactly.
So there's a difference. There's a difference of helping people and not harming them. And I think Yuta, in that sense, is that second type, right? That second type of shonen protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
The one that has to learn his powers. And there's a lot of similarities and things like that, but we'll get into that a little bit in characters. But I think for me, with my first impressions, this show hit me like a ton of bricks. You know what? It's weird, because I was thinking, oh, you know what? It might just be like Demon Slayer. I was sort of worried originally when I was watching this film, because I felt, are we going to see a season 2 recap for Jujutsu Kaisen and they're just going to chop up the film in the second season? I would have hated that. But the way the film was structured and the unique story and the fact that it is a prequel made me think, okay, we're not going to get any recaps in the anime.
Yeah.
I was happy. So that kind of cooled me down a little bit. But there was... From the get-go, so much emotion.
Yeah, definitely.
So much shit that went down, and you really wanted to know all these things. Like, from the beginning, you see, as you mentioned, you see Yuta getting bullied, and then, obviously, we watched the English dub, so it hit different for me, and all you hear is Rika, like, don't bully Yuta. And she just, like, screams it.
Yeah.
And obviously murders these kids. But it was insane. And then we get taken to the, underground room where Gojo is all the time and talking to, like, the higher-ups. And I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be the same as the original with Yuji.
Yeah, right? Can I just say something real quick? I think the higher-ups are so fucking stupid.
I hate
them. They want to get rid of all the sorcerers who, like, have the potential to actually grow, even though they're cursed. But, like, we've seen this with Yuji. Like, he has this thing where, like, he doesn't fully succumb to the demon or, like, the curse. It's more like he merges together, and of course, I get that they are, like, oh, we don't want, like, this big danger, like, happening, right? But at the same time, it's like, why do you always go as far as saying, oh, we need to execute this guy and this? Like, they're all fucking children, and maybe, like, at least see where you're going. It's so, like, to me, it's just, like, ignorant. Like, come on.
I 100% understand it, but it doesn't make much sense to me because, okay, let's say this was the first time they did it with Yuta, and then knowing what happens in the film and knowing what happens with Yuta and what he can do with his powers and his curse, you would think that the higher ups in the school and stuff would think, hey, actually, let's give Yuji a shot because it worked so well with Yuta.
Yeah.
But no, they gave him the same treatment with the execution shit. And I was like, what? That doesn't make fucking sense. But, you know, we're comparing apples to oranges here because at the end of the day, they're not going to include that in season one because it wouldn't drive the story forward if he wasn't going to be executed, if that makes sense.
I still just think the elders are fucking dumb.
No, that's dumb. They're so dumb. I agree with you.
Because, like, also, like, stupid. What is the reason you got Gojo around? Have you seen what this guy can do? His abilities far surpass so far what any, like, curse has been doing. And, like, even with Sukuna, it's like, you've seen how Gojo, like, literally just, like, knocks him the fuck out. So, like, where's the problem? Like, come on. Have some faith.
I think it's probably because, as you mentioned, they're worried because they got to take on quite a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Going into it, right, it felt very similar at the beginning in terms of the first impressions with the initial season of Jujutsu Kaisen because it followed very similar story beats.
Yeah.
At the beginning, at least, you know, with Yuta. Obviously, Yuta's a different character, but he's getting used to the whole jiu-jitsu school. He's doesn't know what to do. He's meeting the team for the first time. He gets paired up with the teams in the same way that Yuji was paired up with Nobara at the beginning.
Yeah.
And they kind of go into the same sort of things. Yes, I think he was teamed up with Maki for the first bit where you see Rika get unleashed for the first time. He understands what is the need for curses. What is the need for, you know, what happens when you basically have cursed energy, things like that. You get a lot of sort of backstory.
Yeah.
But it's not told in detail because I'm guessing the film assumes that you've already seen the first season of Jujutsu Kaisen. But at the same time, it kind of does give you some, it kind of gives you some backstory, but not the full thing, if that makes sense. Which makes sense because you're most likely not going to watch this film unless you've seen first season.
Yeah.
Because there would be no reason for you to watch it. But yeah, that was in terms of my first impressions. I was kind of like thinking, oh my God, this is going to be the same as Jujutsu Kaisen. And I was a bit disappointed in that. But here's the difference. Rika is the main difference for me. I think is the main driving force for me in terms of my first impressions and actually enjoying the film. So it's a big difference. When you get that scene with Rika and you understand the trauma that goes on. And that happens quite early on. And I was just like, fuck, shit has just got real.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we've seen a scene like that or a motivation like that in Jujutsu Kaisen season one, in my opinion. So that in itself and the fact that you get that sort of progression as you go forward makes it really interesting.
Yeah.
I would argue the first 20 minutes of the film was more captivating than the first 5 episodes of the first season. That's just my opinion.
I don't know if I would necessarily agree with that because I feel like the movie is, of course, more focused on Yuta and Rika. But while it's like more focused on the two of them, the five first episodes of Jujutsu Kaisen are like focused on all of these different characters. And I wouldn't go that far because I feel like
I feel like it's kind of, I don't know, like I don't see the use in like honestly comparing the two of them and saying like this is more spectacular than that. Personally, I thought like the first five episodes of Jujutsu Kaisen also like gave me a lot, but again, it's like, of course, to each their own. But I mean, you also have to bear in mind it's a movie. Of course, it'll be super action filled. But yeah, I mean, I have to say, I think it was definitely, I guess, a change of pace, maybe. Or it was definitely, it made a big difference on how, you know, we're used to curses being so awful and harming the ones that are cursed. And in the movie, it's like, you literally got Rika pretty much protecting Yuta. And that's what, for me, made like the biggest change. I don't know, I really enjoyed it. I was like, this is supposed to be like a really evil entity, but in the end, it seems like she cares so much for him, and that for some reason that really warmed my heart, even though it's like people in the movie were trembling in fear of Rika, which I also get.
Yeah, I mean, it's to be expected, because even the other curses were afraid of her.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
She's a special grade. But mentioning favorite, what were your favorite moments in the film? Were there any key moments that stood out to you and you'd say, like, you know what, this is actually great. I love this bit, or I love that bit.
Honestly, whenever Rika appeared.
Okay.
Like, in both of her forms, both in her curse form and like her human form, because you could tell, like, as her, like, her human form, she was so wholesome. She was like, oh my god, like, I love her, she's so sweet. And to see her turning into this huge monster, right, and basically annihilating everything that she crosses paths with, it was also like this love for Yuta that really got me. It's like she loved him so much, like she will destroy anything and anyone. And when she fucked up that huge curse in the very first mission, I was like, yes, you go, girl. You know, like when you could tell she had fun killing that huge ass curse in the elementary school, I was like, oh my god, she's living right now, and I love that for her.
It's interesting. I want to kind of dedicate some time for Rika in the characters portion, but it's very interesting. I really did also enjoy her scenes. And for me, like, my favorite moments of the film were the Rika moments, right? Because
exactly.
Your main characters in the film are Yuta and Rika, and what I liked the most about it was just you get a lot of backstory about Rika. You learn a lot of her as a character. And, like, literally, my favorite moment, I know it sounds really deep, I hate saying this, but when she died, when she got run over by that bus or that truck or whatever.
That was awful.
It's an awful point, but it's one of my favorite moments in the show, because you learn motivation. You understand the motivation behind it. And it was just such an emotional situation, because you see this girl handing a boy, it was very sweet and innocent, you know, handing the rings, right? And they're sort of making a promise to one another that they're going to get married, you know? Yeah. And that they'll live their lives together. And then it cuts straight to her getting murked by a truck. Yeah. And I'm not like excited by the fact that she died, but that sort of emotional moment.
It's a key moment. It's a key moment, really.
It's a key moment. But what I'm saying is, I like the transition between that very sweet, innocent moment and then the fact that it's just taken away from Yuta.
Yeah.
At the same time, you get that very emotional, happy, innocent moment sort of escalate very quickly into this sad, depressive moment, right? So you see the difference, you see that ramping up, and you learn about the motivation for Yuta. And I think you also, one of my other favorite moments is that same moment, but towards the end, when it's mentioned that Yuta was the one that cursed Rika and actually created this curse because he didn't want her to die, he wanted her to be with him. And I thought that was sweet. And there's, once again, it allows you to understand the motivation behind it. It allows you to understand, why is Yuta that way? Why he is that way as a character? That was literally one of my favorite moments. And like I said as well, Jacob, I think one of my other favorite moments is when we do see Yuta and Rika in combat, because that's just fantastic in terms of animation and all that kind of stuff. So it's great. for me, I will say this, the film is quite interesting because, I mean, we do have our favorite moments and episodes, and we did share that our favorite moments within the film were the ones that have Rika in it, mm-hmm. and the ones that sort of revolve around her character development along with Yuta. I will say this, I think that the reason why that they are my favorite episodes has something to do with the story, right? Yeah. Jujutsu Kaisen is a shonen show, mm-hmm. right? It has its sort of shonen beats in it, and this show, this film does have that, right? Yeah. It has the progression, you know, Yuta being quite timid, mm-hmm. not knowing how to fight, and then he goes and fights the curse with Inomaki, and you learn about the characters throughout, and you see the different pairings, because you know he's paired with everyone, yeah. right? He's paired with Maki. He's not so much paired with Panda, but I think probably the reason why he's not paired with Panda is because we got so much Panda character development mm-hmm. in season one, and it would have felt like more of the same. So we see him get paired up with Maki, we see him get paired up with Inumaki as well, and it's quite interesting because we learn a lot more about the characters. But then also throughout the film you get to see Yuta growing, yeah. right? So there's that character development, that growth there, which I don't know. It happens in a lot of shonen, but this is the difference. What if I said to you, Jacob, that this isn't a shonen film?
I would be like, oh my God, I can't believe that.
No, but seriously, it isn't a shonen film.
No, here's the thing. I think I'm one of the few people who is like, I don't even go as far as labeling a certain manga like shonen manga or shoujo manga. I don't even go that far. Like for me, it's only like the genre and that's it. Like it's like either horror or it's like action. I don't even think about if it's shonen or shoujo. A lot of people do. I don't.
I don't want to get too much into it, but I would consider shoujo and shonen separate genres.
Yeah, you know? I do get that.
Do you see
yeah.
what I'm saying? So, but what I mean by I don't think of it as a shonen show is that I wouldn't class this as a shonen. I wouldn't class this as an action because at its core, it's a romance anime. And that might not freak out people. People might be thinking, Bish, what the fuck are you talking about? What are you smoking? Are you sure you haven't been smoking anything and I haven't been drinking? But
what I'm thinking about is, you know, like if you say like a romance or romantic, I feel like here's the difference. Because in Zero, it's like, you know, like usually you have when there's like a love gone wrong or something, usually it's like not that, it doesn't become the core of a story. But I feel like with Zero, it's this huge difference because in its core, it's love, but you've got everything going on. Like it went, let me just say it went to shit because of the accident or like the Rika dying, and then it's like it's Yuta's motivator whatever, and it's like I don't really know how to explain it. It is, as you mentioned, in its core it is a romance movie, you know what I'm talking about. But I agree. It's at the same time, it's like it's not that it's heavily focused on that. Like it's once again, it's like the love, but then it's like everything else overshadows it. And I feel like that's why it's, for me at least, it's so different. And it's not like we've got one episode where we're talking about love and the rest is just action. I feel like everything is, as you mentioned, it's love is the core, and that's why everything else happens.
And you took the words right out of my mouth, right? So it is, love is the core. And it's so weird because as soon as I saw this sort of obsession, you know, when you think about it, in a sense, Rika is your typical yandere character, right? That only I can be with Yuta. Because you know what? She tries to kill Maki.
Well, let's yeah, be real. I mean, as a curse, she is.
But that's because she's a curse, right? But even then, it's like, I hate yandere characters in anime, but I loved Rika as a character. Once again, I'll talk about this more as characters, but it's the fact that, as you mentioned, everything has got to do with their love, right? The fact that they put on the rings, you know, yeah. the fact that that is the Yuta's motivator. But at the end of the day, Yuta got the power from himself, right? He grew in confidence because of their love. And you see it towards the end when he's fighting Sugiwara, right? Mm-hmm. Where literally he goes in for the kiss. He's kissing a curse, mind you.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people be like, oh, that's gross. But bear in mind, this is someone he's loved since
exactly,
10 years old. And he goes in for that kiss and he's like, look, I'm willing to die for you.
Exactly. That's
give me your strength. That's true love. I don't think I've ever seen love like that in. I've watched a lot of romance animes. I don't think I've ever seen love like that in any romance anime that
exactly.
I've seen. And that says something.
Exactly. I feel like that's why it's so powerful. And that's something where I'm like, but that's the kind of love I would have for someone if I truly love them. And I hope they would have the same love for me. I feel like if people watch the movie, they might disregard that one scene as like, oh, it's a curse. And I'm like, no, you dimwit. That's not the fucking point. The point is that this is the person, or in this case, it's already like a bit of an entity still, but it's still Rika. It's still the person he has loved since he was like, I don't know, like
10. Exactly. Since he was 10.
Exactly. So like it's
well, even probably before 10, because she died 6 years ago when they were 10, but they met each other in the hospital when they were even younger
than
that.
Exactly. And that's
because they were both sick kids. So it could have been like it's basically a childhood romance, right?
Yeah. And that's why I found it so wonderful when he went in for like to literally kiss her as a curse. And that's also why I felt like I don't want to yet get into the ending like that, but I feel like that's why I felt like at the moment where you could see like everything was like almost over, he was just like on his knees like saying sorry and stuff, and like that must have felt, he must have felt so hollow in a way, because he knows that the one person he's had around for like several years now is like leaving him, and he's of course like advancing in his life with Jujutsu High School, but it's like you're saying goodbye to your old friend and saying goodbye to your loved one. And I felt like when that happened, I was like, damn, Jesus, like that's so, oh my god, like I can't even describe it. It must have hurt like shit.
And there's a level of strength that you see in Yuta because of that. And it's sort of the sentiment that love conquers all, right? Yeah. That it seems cheesy, but it's like the true strength is the strength that you find in true love, exactly. Right? I hate saying that, but it's true. And this anime shows that. And it kind of reminds me of shows like Toradora. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I'm not going to spoil it for you, but there are moments in Toradora where you see that love being proclaimed, right? And it's very powerful. And those scenes in which you see Yuta and Rika together, every time I see Rika, even in the demon form, even in the curse form, or in the as a child, it makes me cry. Literally, there's such an emotional presence that occurs. Right, you know, finding out that they were both sick kids, and then, you know, with the rings. I will say this with the rings: how does a kid of 10 years old be able to buy these two metal wedding bands?
That's what,
right?
I was wondering about too.
Did she steal her parents' wedding
Wouldn't
rings?
That'd be funny as hell.
Like, it would be because I've seen, like, there was this one TikTok that reminds me of where this boy proposes,
boy, oh my god,
maybe
I
three,
saw
four
that.
Years old,
yes,
you know what I'm talking about, and literally he steals his mum's wedding ring to give to this girl that he likes. So I was thinking maybe that's what's going on. And the thing is, the ring had a diamond in it. I was like, what the fuck, like how? It took me out of it for a moment, right?
The only thing I can potentially think of is that it was passed down to her, maybe. Like, here's the thing, we in the end, I don't think we know much of like Yuta's and Rika's background.
Oh, we do.
Do we?
We know a bit about Yuta and Rika. And it's revealed at the end. Basically, at the beginning, you know, when he was like, oh, maybe I put the curse on Rika. Mm-hmm. And then Gojo's like, yeah, you actually put the curse because you are related to sorcerers. You're related to me. Like, they're long lost cousins. Or
yeah, yeah,
like
I know that.
That.
Yeah.
So we do learn more.
No,
about
I meant
him.
Like, I meant in a way where it's like,
oh,
why?
You mean in terms of her family background?
Family background.
Like,
why were they both in the hospital? How did they? Mm. How did they like grow together? Like, to the point where they were so close that she would like propose to him. Like, of course, it's like implied that they spent so much time together when they were little, but like, there's also like so much context missing. So it's like, of course, it's like, it makes you wonder, why did she have that ring? And I was just like thinking, maybe it was passed down to her. Maybe she didn't have any parents, or maybe the rings that she had were the only things that she had from her parents. Maybe they were in a similar situation as Yuji, who doesn't really know his parents, you know? Mm-hmm. Who, like, we don't know much about Yuji in the first place. Like, of course, he doesn't know his mom. He barely knows anything about his dad. His grandpa passed away, but like that was the only person he was really close with. So we're not given the context of a backstory, and that's what I was of course it's weird that we don't know why she had that ring. The only thing I'm thinking of is she had it passed down by her parents, who I don't know, passed away or something.
We could go into this for hours exactly. as well with different yeah. theories, but like for me, when you mentioned the whole Yuji thing, it kind of brought up the situation that one of the issues that I have with the film is that it brings up the balance of Jujutsu Kaisen again, because as great as it is, there's a lot of things that I think in terms of progression of story that really annoys me, because you hear about this plan that Sugawara has yeah. right, with the thousand curses yeah. right, and literally they build up to it and they say it's happening on the 25th. It's happening on the 24th of December. Okay, first of all, what is the purpose of having it on Christmas?
Exactly.
That was one thing. And then they don't make any reference to Christmas at all. So why specify a date and then have nothing to do with it?
No
one even recognizes it's Christmas. Like, there's not even any Christmas decorations, which I thought was weird, first of all. It might be because I think maybe Christmas in Japan, people go outside a lot, and I think that's probably why. But we weren't given that context, and we weren't given that reasoning behind it. And secondly, there was like an insane time jump. Like, it's not that I wanted to see the preparation, but there was the time jump threw me off.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, okay, why? What the hell? Like, 1 minute they're talking about preparing, and then the next minute they're fighting. And I'm like, okay, there's some stuff that's missing here. And it's in the same way that with Rika and Yuta, we don't quite realize why are they sick in hospital.
Yeah.
We get the glimpse and we know that's why they're there, like that's how they met each other. Why are they such good friends? Why are they in this relationship to a point where they love each other at 10 years old and want to make a promise that will last them for a lifetime? Do you see what I'm
yeah,
saying?
I get that completely, because I was also like, how is that even possible? Like, when I was like 9 or 10, I was not thinking about I'm gonna marry this person. Even no matter how close I was to my friends, I was not like, I'm gonna propose to this person with my ring. Like, no. You know what I was thinking about when I was 10 or 11? I was legit like thinking about which video game I was gonna buy next.
Yeah, and it's expected, because that's what children think about. And I think even children, and I don't want to get onto this level too much, but even children, in the case of that young kid that proposed to this girl at school, right? You know, they do it because they assume that's what adults do.
Exactly. And they think like, I want to be an adult and I want to be a man or something. Yeah. And this is my woman and this is why I want to do this. And it's like...
Exactly. So, but in this case, it's different. In this case, it's different because I felt that there was a true sort of loving relationship, not like this whole childish thing. And the reason why I think that is probably, and I might be overstepping some boundaries here, but I think the reason is because they were both sick.
Yeah.
They were both in a children's hospital. And it makes me think that it might be the case that they were probably both dying. And so they had to kind of possibly grow up quicker than the rest yeah. of the kids. So it might be a case that she was thinking about it in a perspective that, look, I don't know, maybe, you know, I sort of survived death. I've survived illness. And so I've met this guy and I want to spend my life with him. And that's a very adult way of thinking, and a truly adult way, not the sort of childish idea of how adults act, if that makes yeah. sense. So maybe I might be going too far in terms of thinking, but I think that is a plausible explanation for it. But it doesn't excuse the fact that we don't actually get an answer behind all of these things in the film. And I understand it is a film, but I still think we should have either gotten more explanation or none of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my
opinion. Yeah, exactly.
And the fact that they've given it to us without any more context, it kind of takes it down a notch for me, which is a shame.
Yeah, definitely. I yeah, in a way I felt a bit, it felt like they were giving us that and they were just like, okay, work with this. I don't, like, me personally, I don't see a problem with it, but at the same time, it's like, it's also, it seems so strange, because it's like you would think they had everything like worked out, right? Like, you would think they would have this worked out, and like, why are they in the hospital? Why is this happening? Why is that happening? And it's just like, no, we don't get that. We get the engagement ring. We get okay, well, she dies, of course, like that stuff happens. But like, we don't get why they're in the hospital. We don't get the whole how did she get the ring? Like, it's all very open, and like, again, it's like, they're children. how is she gonna get her hand on that? Like, give me something. I need something. I'm okay with her having the ring passed down to her. I don't think that she was like, oh, I'm gonna go to the next jewelry store and like buy it for like 20,000 yen or something. It doesn't work that way. Especially because at that age, you can't even make purchases like that. That's just how it is.
People would question you.
Exactly.
Yeah, 100%. Or she could have asked her parents to buy the rings.
Yeah, but even then, it's like, what type of parent does that?
Okay, look, we're going. I mean, well, if your kid was sick,
yeah,
I would probably do anything. Anyway, we're going too far into this. This isn't the discussion we need to
keep going.
So, speaking of Yuta and Rika, I think it's a very perfect place to talk about our characters because they are the new characters. But I'm not sure if you realize this, Yuta was mentioned a shit ton in the first season.
Yeah.
And I did not fucking realize that. And it was the same with Sugawara. I did not realize Sugawara was in the first season of Jujutsu Kaisen. You see him, but it didn't click.
Yeah.
I don't know why it did not click for me. And it brings up a lot of questions because Yuta killed Sugawara, right?
Yeah.
And yet Sugawara is in the first season of Jujutsu Kaisen.
Yeah.
His appearance is slightly different because he looks like he's been stitched up.
Yeah.
And yeah, it makes me think what would have happened. Like, did Gojo save him? Did Gojo finish him off? And that is something that I wanted to know, but...
Wait, I'm drawing a...
I don't know.
I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank here. Who the fuck was Sugawara again?
Sugawara was the most powerful sorcerer. Sugawara.
Oh, he's the end guy.
The what?
He was the guy at the end?
Yeah, but he was the guy during the whole film. What the... What?
Wait, do you mean...
No, not Sugawara.
Yeah, I was like... Suguru. Yeah, I was like, apologies. Sugawara.
I've been calling him Sugawara for some reason. His name is Suguru.
You mean Geto.
Geto, yeah.
Okay, we gotta pronounce that word a little differently.
Okay.
Geto.
So Geto. So when we see, also I find it quite interesting that you have Satoru Gojo and Suguru Geto.
SGSG. Oh my god, it's Singapore.
It's what?
Singapore. Isn't SG like a abbreviation
SG
for
is,
Singapore?
It is an abbreviation for Singapore. Singapore is beautiful, by the way. shout out to our Singaporean.
Shout out to Singapore.
There are some. Shout out to Singapore. Singapore, sponsor us. No, but seriously, it's interesting because when you see Satoru Gojo and Suguru Geto,
yeah,
they are basically, even their names are pretty similar, yeah, right? Satoru, Suguru, Geto, Gojo. It's the names are very similar, and it's like they are counterfoils to one another,
yeah,
right? You got your good character that in Gojo, and you've got your antagonist, which is Geto in this sense.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to know, did Gojo like sort of let him go and thought, you know what, I'm just gonna leave him be? Because he's in the anime.
Yeah.
So it makes me think, what happened there? And it also goes back to the point of the show and the anime not really piecing those pieces together. It might be revealed to us more in season two.
I think so, yeah. I think so.
But I don't know. Like, there's a lot that we don't get. I will say this, though. Suguru, I didn't click for me that Suguru was in the first season. Even though it's the same character with the same voice actor, but it didn't click.
What do you mean it didn't click? You didn't recognize him?
I didn't recognize him. And I think it was, because, you know, Suguru was stitched together in the first season, right? Like, you can see he's got like a scar from, like, it looks like he's been stitched, literally.
Well, this is like me, of course, like assuming things, but maybe it was Mahito who
could be.
Mahito or what was her name? Hanami? Mm-hmm. Was it Hanami? The flower antagonist.
I think it's Hanami. Yeah, might be.
I think it might have been one of
the
two
curses.
Because I mean Mahito or of course Hanami, but like I think it might even actually be Mahito because he can transfigure people.
It's not just transfiguration, because they mention in the season one and they also mention in the film that there's this reverse type of jujitsu,
exactly,
right,
where, like healing,
where you can heal people with curses. So I think that might have happened, that reverse jujitsu.
And he
might
has
have,
stitches himself
might have happened. Yeah, he might have been stitched up and then obviously that the healing could have happened. But it makes me think, did Gojo kill him? Because you can't bring someone back to life, right? It's either Gojo let him leave or Gojo finished him off. And the fact that he's in season one makes me think that, well, Gojo didn't kill him. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting with his character as well, because you see more of him. Because in season one, he's kind of like, yeah, we know he's the bad guy, but that's only because he's working directly with curses. You don't see the level of evilness that he has, if that makes sense. He's sort of like this side antagonist, if that makes sense, right? But in the film, you see him as like this douchebag that's sort of charging for like exercising. But he's not exercising the curses to help people. He's ultimately doing it to build an army of curses. It's mentioned that he has like, what, 4,000 curses at once or something? So he's basically stealing the curses from people, these smaller curses, so that he can, you know, use them. And his main goal was to get Rika.
Yeah.
Which is quite interesting. I mean...
Yeah, I agree. I was like, God, you know what? I hate that guy, actually. I hate Gito. He's like...
Ugh. You hate him?
I really can't stand him.
But why?
Because he has this... He's this person who's like, only sorcerers are allowed to like live. And he mm-hmm. calls non-sorcerers monkeys. Mm-hmm. And that is... I just don't have a positive opinion on people like that. Like, it's so funny because I'm literally like, hey, if he wants to go and kill dozens of people for no reason, he's allowed to because he's a villain, but he cannot talk shit about normal human beings. I'm like, why does it upset me so much? So stupid.
He kind of reminds me of like, there's some Slytherin characters in Harry Potter that are like, you know, that sort of insult that someone that is not, or mudblood, right? Their one of their parents is a wizard and the other one is a human. Yeah. It's kind of like that. I think he meant it as an insult, basically to call them primates, like monkey.
Yeah.
Like the monkeys that we would have evolved from, right? Basically very primitive because they don't have sorcery powers. And he meant it as an insult. And he meant it to be offensive.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, it kind of works well in a sense that we kind of hate him as a character because of that, right? Yeah. And to be honest with you, like, there's other reasons I hate him, because he literally murdered a guy. Like, he was like, oh, remember when he was like that guy that stormed in and was like, you have to exorcise this demon. And he was like, well, I either do it for money or like to gain your curse, and you know, you're all out of money. And he just murks him. Has no regard for this life. Which is weird, because you see the scenes between him and Gojo in the beginning, and they're smiling and they're laughing, and Gojo seems to have had a genuine relationship with Geto, and it's as if Geto threw that out of the window, right? Imagine being a friend with someone, going to school with someone, and yeah, you have differing opinions, but to throw that all out to the point where, you know, to achieve your goal, you are willing to kill your friend, right? It was really weird, because it's just like, normal human beings don't act like that.
Yeah, I agree. It was definitely like, Jesus, this guy, he's so much. Like, what the fuck?
And the thing is, sometimes I respect villains and I respect their motivations. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know how to explain it. Like, there's some villains that actually have, like, backstories. Like, for example, if you're looking at Demon Slayer, right? The demons, they weren't bad to begin with. They were just put into that situation, and then they became villains because of that. But this guy, it seems that he just wanted to become a villain. He's, like, he wants genocide. It's weird.
I know that a lot of people might not be like, maybe they don't see the way I do, but like, I feel like I'm just so bothered, because it's like, he wants to create this new world of sorcerers only, and yet it's like, he's willing to kill other sorcerers for that reason. And I just don't, like, I'm like even Gojo said it himself, like, I can't believe you're going for younger sorcerers. Like, mm-hmm. you know, they're like still in the process of like growing, practicing, training, all that, and you're just gonna attack young sorcerers because you wanna follow your dumb ideals. It's like,
well, it's not just him attacking, he's also grooming them as well.
Yeah, like, grooming, killing, all of that.
Literally, he's taken sorcerers, like, he's training them and he's brainwashing them to his own ideals from a young age.
Yeah, like the two sisters, the 15-year-olds.
Yeah. Nanako and Mimiko, right? I get it. Their situations were kind of messed up. I do understand that. And in a sense, he was saving them. But it's like a level of Stockholm syndrome, right? Because they're basically following him. And he's like, I don't know. I don't want to say kidnapping them, but it's weird. It's like, they respect him because obviously he saved their life. But in return, they're sort of following his weird ideals. And they would do anything for him now, right? to the point where they're 15 and they're hanging people. It's messed up. Genuinely, it is messed up. And it makes me think, like, this guy, and Jacob, I don't know if I'm going to remove this bit in the episode, but I am going to say it. This guy is basically Hitler. And
you know what? I had that same kind of...
He is.
I had that same kind of trail of thought, because it's like he sees a certain type of people as inferior or dirty, yeah. Or
he wants to create whatever. The world with a master race.
Exactly.
It's fucked up.
Exactly.
And he's brainwashing people. Look, I don't know if I'm going to keep this in the episode, but he is basically Hitler. And it didn't really appear to me until talking about it today. And I think that's probably why we all dislike him, to be honest with you. And I think if you do like him as a character after watching this film, you are fucked up in the head. I'm sorry. I'm just gonna go out there and say it, because there is nothing attractive about Gator. Maybe in physical appearance,
yes, terms, but other than that, no.
He's a monster. He's disgusting. I actually hate him, right? We mentioned in the previous episode that we don't hate any characters in the show, right? But I hate him. He's the worst type of villain. There's no redeemable qualities.
I do have to mention him. That I mean, of course, this is not movie but anime based, but I hated the scene where him and that volcano curse just fucked up the entire restaurant, because I thought it made no sense. Of course I get it, like, yeah. now I get it, but like, when I watched it, I was like, and you did this for what? What, like, how did that benefit you? Why would you go that far? It's so dumb. It's so fucking dumb. Yeah. And this guy is literally the worst guy. Of course, he's probably one of the most efficient villains in terms of, like, being a really actual villain and being an asshole as well. But at the same time, it's like, why? Like, it makes no sense to me.
He's doing it for like his own pleasure, and I hate that, because it's like, for example, if you look at all the great villains in pop culture, the Joker, right?
Yeah.
The Joker has a reason to do what he needs to do, right? Or if you look at someone like Loki from the Marvel universe, Loki is in a sense an anti-hero. Like, I love Loki as a character. Loki is a villain, right?
Yeah.
But I love Loki as a character because Loki has some redeeming qualities. Like, Suguru has no redeeming qualities at all. I actually hate him. But besides the point, I think we've spoken enough about Suguru. And you know what? It's funny, because as I was listening to it, because we watched the dubbed version, yeah. Right? I was listening to it and I was like, his voice sounds familiar, and he kind of gives off this Sumayi vibe. As I was listening to the voice, He is voiced by Sumayi. He's, well, Sumayi before Dynasty Warriors 6. So
yeah.
Lex Lang, you know what, Lex? Mad respect to you, because you've made me hate this character, right? It's part of the voice. Like, I remember speaking to KG and Aaron back in the day, and they were like, you know what, sometimes when the voices are so good that it makes you want to hate a character,
yeah,
they're talking about Dong Zhuo in Dynasty Warriors, and they were like, you know, I really like Dong Zhuo, but I hate him as a character, and the fact that you hate the character shows how well the acting is,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So bravo, Lex. You know, I hated this character because how good the acting was and how well written the character was, if that makes sense. So bravo on that point.
Also, I do have to admit that it does make me wonder why he has that attitude. The whole,
what do you mean,
like the whole, I think that sorcerers are the only type of human, or like people that are supposed to exist in this world. It makes me wonder if something triggered that in him, or if he's grown up thinking like that.
I don't think he's grown up thinking like that, because it's sort of, this is another thing where the film and the show doesn't give you enough context,
yeah.
But they give you a little snippet of them in Jujutsu High, and he mentions it at the end. He says, I don't hate Jujutsu High. He said it,
yeah, and he was like, I could just never have like a genuine smile around anyone in Jujutsu High. He did, yeah, say like that. And he also when he was like talking to Gojo, right, he was like, oh, Gojo's like, I didn't trust you, and like, and Geto was like, you're the one to say that, you know, in that kind of way. And mm-hmm. And you know, you see these flashbacks of the class, like that the girl they were in the team with, it makes me wonder what happened. Like,
I don't want to get too forward. I think what might have happened is like, they wouldn't put that woman in there for no reason. I think something happened to her that sort of triggered Suguru to go down this downward spiral.
Yeah.
if that makes sense. And once again, it's down to speculation because we're not given that context. And it's a shame because I'd really want to know more about, as fucked up as Suguru is, I want to know about his motivation.
Me too.
Because, you know, you have to think about it. How do you get that fucked up? There has to have been something. And I think part of me wants me to believe that there was an event that made him like that and that he wasn't just born an asshole, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's just me wanting to believe in humanity a little bit. But in regards to other characters, we got to see a lot more character development, particularly with Maki. But I think we got to see more with Inumaki, because I think with Inumaki, we understood more about his powers a little bit more. You know, he goes in and buys the little throat spray.
Yeah. I love that.
Which I thought was cool. I liked it. And we also find out that he's not the only one in his family that has this sort of cursed speech. The rest of his family have that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because it's like, how the hell can they, like, what's going on? And also, we find out that he can actually talk.
Yes.
Because he's at the end, right, where he's getting beaten the shit out of by Suguru. He tells Yuta, run away.
Yeah.
And he names him by name and he's like, run away. So he can speak. I just think he doesn't necessarily have control of his cursed speech to the point where he could turn it off to speak, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think, like, that I of course, like, if you had the control, I think that was especially evident if you remember in the anime when the whole forest attack happened. The old guy with the guitar, he also used cursed speech. Mm. Like at the end he had the guitar out and then he used cursed speech against the Code Rat guy.
Yeah.
So here you're probably right that he hasn't mastered it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other guy, he can talk like a normal person. He just, like, he knows when to use it and he knows how to use it. And this, mm-hmm. the sad part is, Inumaki, apparently, we all know, like, of course he can talk normally. Like, he also, like, he says, like, plummet and stuff like that. He knows, like, he's not stupid. Mm-hmm. He can talk normally. It's just, like, doesn't have it under control. And I feel like That is also such a key thing with Yuta, because they mm-hmm. do mention it in the, I think Panda says it actually, like, he's like, you know, Inumaki, he knows what you're going through because you cannot control Rika and he can't control the cursed speech yet. So this is a very similar thing and he doesn't want you to get hurt because of it. And I felt like that was to me personally, I felt like that brought, like, Inumaki really closer to my heart. Oh my god, let me say it like mm-hmm. that. But I definitely got more, I felt more sympathy for him, you know, because of mm-hmm. course in the anime you're like, it doesn't come off as comedy relief, but it does come off as, you know, kind of funny.
Yeah, it does, you get that level of comedy relief from Panda. I think we saw
Inumaki. Oh, shit, okay. I'm sorry. But
okay,
like, because it's always like, you know, like, something happens and he's like, salmon or like roe or something like that. Like, he mm-hmm. always has ingredients, mm-hmm. but that's not because he's willing to say it. It's because he can't express himself otherwise. And so,
which is true.
It comes off as comedic, but it's really not. And I feel like that's the worst part. And I feel like also Inumaki might have come to terms with the fact that people don't really understand him. But at the same time, it's also like, I feel like it might bother him at times because it's like he knows he can't control it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And it was a very interesting point that you mentioned comic relief, because I'm just going to jump into Panda for a moment because we learn more about Panda, but I think his character development, I don't quite like it in the film. In fact, I kind of hate it. I love Panda as a character. We did mention this last episode, but Panda seems like a punching bag for jokes. Like, it seems like the only reason Panda is there just to make jokes. And it's unfortunate, right? Because he kind of does the same sort of Todo type joke where he's like, what do you prefer? And he did the same. He was like, oh, do you like big tits or small tits? And I was like, oh, Panda,
I think it was.
You're better than this.
I didn't understand it myself, honestly, because it was like, is he really trying to hook up Maki with Yuta right now?
I think the reason he is trying to do that, because I think it's probably because he knows that Maki is alone and that kind of stuff, but it feels forced. It's kind of like when your friends are like, oh, I think you should go out with that guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it feels like that, and I get it because they're in a high school setting. It makes sense, but not for this show. I think the reason why Panda did that was mainly as a deus ex machina for the ending, towards the end where, you know, do you know what I mean? Because yeah. if they sort of build this sort of pseudo romantic relationship between the two characters, it will then give a reason for Rika to freak out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's that was only there to give Risa, to give Rika a reason to freak out, right? And it's cheap. I don't like it. It kind
of
makes me
think. I thought
it was
out of place. Definitely.
It is. It is very out of place. But I understand why they did it. It makes me respect Panda a lot less. One other thing about Panda is that we mentioned in the last episode that we thought Panda was an actual panda. He isn't.
Yeah, I was like, I was not sure because you told me like he was like an actual panda. I was like,
well, he was a baby.
He was a baby, like, but it, like he was manufactured as a cursed doll or a, you know, as a cursed.
Yeah,
being.
Because we.
But he was brought up like thinking like he has like. Panda siblings or panda relatives, when in reality it's like he was made using
he's a soft toy.
Yeah, but like
he's a teddy bear.
He had something imbued by with pandas and gorillas. Like that's
well, he has the core.
Exactly.
So he's got these three cores, right? I get that, but what I'm saying is he's literally a stuffed animal.
Yeah, that's why yesterday I was so confused when we recorded because I was like, I don't think he's an actual.
But you know what,
panda.
Jacob? It's an inconsistency because in first season, he bleeds, right? But in the film, right, he loses an arm and you see like little pieces of stuffing fall
yeah,
out
I
of his arm and his chest. And I'm like, okay, so how come he's bleeding in first season and here he isn't?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is going on? There's an inconsistency there.
Yeah.
I will say that. It was just weird. It made me change my thoughts on Panda. I do respect Panda, but it made me respect Panda a lot less. Maki? What do you think about Maki? Because I know you love Maki.
I love
in
Maki.
This film, right?
Oh my god. Oh, she's so good. She is so good. Of course, in the beginning, I was like, why is she so harsh on him? But like at the same time, I also understood it because it's like she was probably over the whole like him like dragging himself along right next to her, like behind her. But at the end, it was like you could tell they were getting closer, and not in a romantic way for me, because it was like that, as you mentioned, it was kind of. I didn't think of them as like a couple. You know, it was always to me like Yuta and Rika are, you know, the loved ones. That's for me, period. But Maki, in a way I feel like it's kind of stupid because I don't really think of Maki as someone who's like reliant on someone else, because from the get-go she's been that person who's like, I'm gonna leave this family, I'm gonna focus on myself. And that's what she should do, because it's like, I don't want to say like it's gonna make her weak if she relies on someone else, because it's like, hey, if she loves someone, she's gonna love them. But like I respect the fact that she always kept going no matter what. If you asked me if I liked Mai or Maki more, I would definitely say Maki. Not because Maya is like a whatever bitch or whatever, but like Maki's this person who's like, she doesn't let herself down. She keeps going, she keeps fucking shit up. And even when she was practicing with Yuta, she was like kicking his ass, and when he wasn't paying attention, she was still gonna knock him off of his feet. And I love that.
I think the reason being is because she always has that motivation in her mind, right? She wants to take down the Zenin clan.
Exactly.
And her own family, because they mocked her, they made her feel like shit. Because she doesn't have the sorcerer's powers, right? She doesn't have cursed energy. And the funny thing is, the fact that, and this, I think this is what makes her interactions with Suguru more important as well, is because Suguru notices that, you know, she doesn't have any cursed energy. She can't use it as a sorcerer. Yeah. So he casts her away and she's like, oh, you know what? You're shit.
You're a monkey, you know, like them.
Basically. So she has more to prove as a character.
Yeah.
And it's the truth. You mean her being part of this massive clan and the rest of her family have the ability to actually use cursed items to create curses, that kind of stuff. Like the fact that they are, you know, quote unquote sorcerers and she isn't, you know, all she can use is cursed items. She can't actually see curses without her glasses. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she is already at a disadvantage. She has so much more to prove. And I think what was very interesting is that, I don't know, it's like she shows a level of vulnerability.
She does.
In the film that you don't see in the anime,
but
right?
But she doesn't let it get to her. And that's what I admire so much, because it's like, it's okay to show that you have this and that about yourself. But she keeps on like saying like, but that's beside the point. I'm not here to show my emotions. I'm here to kick ass, and that's what I love about her so much. And I feel like
I feel like
in a way I need to take that to heart as well and just be like, Baki is not here to play. She's not here to to fucking tell you about her problems. She's not here to do that. She's here to literally grow so much but she can kick the ass of her entire clan. And when I saw in the movie, I think it was her mother, you see this one backflash where it's like this elderly woman or like a bit older woman, and she says like, oh, did you see Maki, the oldest one or something? She's a disgrace and this and that. And that was like, you know what, Maki, you go out there and kick their fucking asses. And I was just, seeing that alone, like before that I already loved her, but like seeing that alone made me just like go like, God, I love her. She's so amazing. Oh, and when she practiced with Yuta, and like he was like, oh, I see an opening, and she was like, no, you don't, and she did the, you know, like the split and like countered him. I was like, she knows what the fuck she's doing, and that's what I love so much. Like, she knows she can't use cursed energy, but that doesn't stop her from like kicking his ass. And oh God, like, oh my God, I love Maki. She's so good. That's why I just changed my icon to her.
See, I noticed that. I was just like, oh, okay, did you just change it? You changed it from Yuji yesterday to Maki. Because Maki is a badass. It's kind of like this whole Nobara thing that we mentioned in the previous
episode. I also have a different reason. I'll send you that via text real quick.
Oh, okay. I mean, you can mention it if you want. I wouldn't mind.
I mean, just for future occasions, perhaps, we don't know, but like I won't. But yeah, appearance wise and also I feel like she has the devotion and she has the badass attitude, and I love it.
Definitely. I think I don't know, is there any other characters that you want to bring up? Because, oh, you know what, actually there is one more character I do want to bring up, which is Gojo. How did I not forget? But you know what? Gojo, it's very interesting to see Gojo in this anime, because I feel that we see a different side of Gojo in the film compared to Gojo.
He's a lot more vulnerable, I feel.
He is so much more vulnerable because, you know, you see the backstory of him in Jujutsu High, some glimpses and stuff like that. But you also see the fact that it kind of makes so much more sense when you compare it back to the first season when, you know, he has to go through this whole thing again with Yuji. He goes through this whole thing again with Yuji, right? Yeah. And you see he's more confident in the first season compared to the film. I think in the film at the beginning, he's so cocky, right? He knows who he is. He's like, I'm Gojo, right? And you kind of understand why he's like that, because that sort of interaction between Geto and Gojo, and he's like, oh, are you the strongest because you're Satoru Gojo, or are you Satoru Gojo because you're the strongest?
Exactly. That was also the moment that hit me a bit.
Yeah, and I was just like, damn. Like, he picked Gojo apart. And like I said, you got to see Gojo's motivation. You got to understand Gojo more as a character. He's not just this, you know, beast. Not beast, but like beast character in the sense that he's not just this OP guy. And in fact, you don't see as much of him being OP, if that makes sense. He actually struggles in battle in this, which was incredibly interesting.
Yeah.
One other thing that I wanted to mention is that there is so many different connections between the first season and the film in terms of Yuta specifically. Because during the tournament arc in the first season, it was mentioned, Yuta's constantly mentioned. And in fact, they actually show some glimpses of him.
Yeah.
And Rika, especially because they compare him a lot to Yuji, which I thought was quite interesting. But it was mentioned that Yuta actually partook in the previous tournament from last year, the year before.
Yeah.
Which I was like, what? So when did that happen? Apparently it happened before the Christmas thing.
Really?
Yeah, because it was said, I was looking into it. I know I shouldn't have, but I was looking into it, and apparently that occurred before Christmas. So you know when they had that time skip?
Yeah.
Because I think he gave them like, what, a couple of months, 6 months or something like that. He actually went and trained. That also explains why he was a bit more powerful.
That's also true, because if you remember when that whole thing happened with Maki and Yuta training, Panda said that when they were training, it was already 3 months since he had been in Jujutsu High. So it was like, they, in the movie, we see a lot of like time jumps. But we are not aware of it because we're like, oh, he's fresh to the school. No, he's not. He's been there for like half a year now.
That's the thing. The only time jump that we are aware of is that Christmas time jump.
Exactly.
But we don't know how much time occurred from that Christmas time jump to the beginning of the film. So I could say we can assume maybe a year. That's my opinion, right?
Although I do think they gave like a certain date, but I just can't remember what it was. That's why I like knew right away that it was 2017. The movie was set in, but again, I don't know the exact date.
But yeah, no, it's quite interesting in terms of Yuta because he's constantly mentioned in the first season, and it kind of blew over my head. I was like, who the fuck is this Yuta? And they show him as well. I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? Yeah. Like, and they show him in the film, and I'm like, yes, my boy. I also thought it was quite interesting that as soon as he joins, he doesn't get the black uniform.
Yeah.
He only gets it towards the end of the film. And I thought that was weird because Yuji got the black uniform straight away. I'm picking at threads here, but I thought it was quite interesting. Another thing before we finish off characters is we got to see a cameo from the Kyoto sorcerers.
Yes.
Which I thought was pretty cool, which was nice. I mean, we got to see our boy Todo come in with that reference, the idol reference that he made again. It was quite nice. I will say that. Art style and animation, Jacob, I don't have much to say.
Me neither, honestly.
On art style and animation, because it's pretty much the same as what we said with this first season. I will say this, certain things, the CG wasn't as good as the first season, like the 3D animation. And I kind of noticed it with when they were showing mass amounts of characters, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. With the fish that are swimming around in the strip mall, right? That was done in CG and it looked a bit naff. I didn't quite like it. And then you notice it when Suguru has those little, those little like centipedes that kind of, those red centipedes that kind of come out and fight, if that makes sense. They were all CG and you could notice it. And I was like, no, this is gross. Take this out. I don't like it. I was thinking that was a bit naff. I didn't quite like that. I don't know if you have any points on art style animation.
Not really. I mean, I can definitely say that probably, if anything, I did feel like the fighting animations were really good still.
Yeah, definitely, they were really
like
great.
as in the anime, there were like no frame drops or anything. If anything, it was really good. Like, it was smooth and stuff. I really enjoyed that.
And I think also one of the reasons why it has to be on par, like has to be really good, is because this is being shown on huge screens. So if the animation is shit, it's more noticeable on a bigger screen than it is on a phone or a tablet or even on a TV. So yeah, they had to kind of pull out all the stops, in my opinion. With the music, though, I don't have much to say because there is no opening and ending as such. But the music, the background music was, I think, was better than the original Jujutsu Kaisen. I think it's because it's more noticeable. You had a range of different musical styles. You had your classical music, your more depressing music that kind of happened with the scenes with Rika, right? Those emotional scenes at the crescendos that were occurring. And then you had your scenes with Gojo, where you had the goofy jazz that was playing in the background. And then the fight scenes, you had your sort of Dynasty Warriors 4 style music, right?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes. I was like,
I don't know why. It just felt like that. I was like, yes, I'm down.
You know
for
what
this.
I noticed? They used a certain sound effect that I think it was near the end when the high school got attacked. I think at least. There was this one sound effect that they used, and I'm 100% sure that I recognized that. I'm sorry, this is like the most trivial thing, but like I feel like I 100% recognized that from PT, like the playable trailer for Silent Hills. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Definitely, like I'm so sure that they used the same sound effect. Like, I was like, oh, PT.
They might have. We don't know that, but that it was just, it's so interesting that we notice these things. And like, as I was hearing the music, I was like, you know what? Jujutsu Kaisen, if they made a Musou game, I know it's a bit off topic, but if they made a Musou Jujutsu Kaisen game, I would be fucking down for that.
Same.
I'm just saying, look, this isn't Galp. We don't make game suggestions, but Koei, if you're listening, please make this happen. Team up with Funimation. I know you teamed up with MAPPA and Funimation before to make Attack on Titan a thing in terms of a game. You could do this with Jujutsu Kaisen. I don't think anyone would complain about that. But another thing, voice acting.
Yes.
As you know, we watched the dub. I will say this, Crunchyroll and Funimation gave us access to the dub and the sub. But when we went to watch it, we were a bit late for the sub. And so we decided to to watch the dub instead. I will say one thing. A lot of people hate dubs. I know this for a fact. Dubs have changed a lot since the 90s. Not just that, but it's the fact that this dub was actually really, really good. And I think it's on par.
Yeah.
On par with the Japanese. And I think it's rare that that occurs. But wow, they had a star-studded cast. There are some new voice actors and voice actresses that are in this. But, you know, you had really well-known names.
Yeah.
Right? You know, Allegra Clark, who is the voice of Maki. You had Xander, who is the voice of Inumaki, who voices Joker in Persona 5. Right? We mentioned Lex Lang, the voice of Suguru, who is also the voice of Sumayi and Zugai Liang. Keiji Tang, my boy Keiji, who's the voice of Gojo. But you know what? His voice really works as Gojo. It's weird because Gojo has the sort of goofy moments, but he also has the seriousness. And I don't know. I find that, look, I'm not here to fanboy over Keiji, but I find that Keiji gets roles that are very much similar to his personality, if that makes sense. You know, like Ichiban, or you know, Suma Zhao, or you know what I mean? So it's quite interesting. I'm gonna say another thing. The voice of Yuta, Kaylee McKee, incredible. I will say that, and I
agree.
The voice is fantastic. Agreed. especially because Yuta has this sort of range, right? That you see so many different versions of Yuta: emotional, sad, depressed, angry. Bravo. I genuinely think the voice cast in this film is fantastic. And if you're thinking, oh, what am I going to do? Am I going to watch it dubbed or subbed? I think you can watch either or and still enjoy the film.
Dude, I loved the dub, honestly.
It was so good. You know what? The dub of the film is going to make me watch the anime in dub again. And I don't think I've ever seen a dub that has made me want to do that. But
I can't think of one.
Which one?
But it's not really, because it's... Actually, I can think of two.
Okay.
So, number one, Kill la Kill.
I've never... Oh, you know what? KG's also in Kill la Kill.
Yeah, he plays either Yoragamagori or Tsugumuki Nagase. I think one of the two, right?
Yeah, what was the other anime?
Okay, you're going to laugh at me for this one. Danganronpa 3.
Danganronpa 3?
Yeah.
Three the animation?
Yeah.
You know what, actually? I am actually a really big fan of Danganronpa, like the dub.
Did you watch the third, like...
I have. I've seen both.
Because
both
here's the thing. I've watched it in Japanese, and of course it was marvelous, but then I saw the pop culture references that were made in the English dub.
In the dub,
and Junko like Kamagura, yes, queen. And I was like, okay, I need to rewatch this.
you need to watch it in dub because of that. See, that's exactly the thing. I think with a lot of dubs, because it's not just a word for word translation.
I know
there is a localization that occurs, right? So even here, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there's references because it's done by Funimation and they're based in Texas and California and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So there is a lot of pop culture references that do make its way in, because let's be real, it's not going to be like Pokemon back in the day, you know, where it's like, oh, jelly filled donuts. When it's actually onigiri, you're not going to see that kind of stuff happening in the modern day. That's actually a real thing.
Know.
Have
or,
you seen
or
that?
The huge ass onigiri in Pokemon, and they just turn into a sandwich.
Yeah, it's like it's stupid. Why? Shit like that. But it's like kids won't understand what an onigiri is. Like, come on. But obviously dubs have changed so much since the 90s, and they are comparable with the Japanese and in some cases better. But yeah, no matter what you think, I still think if you get the opportunity, because I know that there's sort of, with anime films, there's always like a limited release.
Yeah.
Like it's very difficult to watch anime films. And sometimes, you know, you might get an opportunity to watch the dub and not the sub. And you're like, oh, you know what? I wanted to watch the sub, so I'm not going to watch the film. Still watch the film in dub because it's still good. It's incredibly good. But that goes on to our next point, Jacob.
Yes.
Would you want to see... We already mentioned we do want to see a second season from the previous episode. But seeing the film, does it hype you for a second season? Because there is a post-credit scene.
It definitely has.
So in this post-credit scene, we see Gojo is in Africa with Miguel and Yuta.
So if you don't know, just in case the listeners don't know Miguel, I mean, probably you've seen the anime or the movie if you're listening to this. But Miguel is the guy that was also part of Gato's squad, and he fought Gojo.
Yeah, and it's interesting how like he was basically an antagonist, and then you find out towards the end of the film that, you know, he's he's just there. And it's interesting because I thought he was an evil guy. He isn't. He was just there because he was getting paid. And he mentions it in the film because he was like, oh, I've only got like 15 minutes until I've met my quota. And I'm like, so this guy's only here to get paid. He doesn't actually care about the his motivation is the money, right? So he's not adherently a bad person, or he's not one of Suguru's followers, if that makes sense. He's just a hired mercenary, which I thought was quite interesting. But yeah, so you see Yuta at the end and he was like, hey, I got something for you, right? Do you want to come back? So you'd presume that that's happening in modern day.
You know,
well, by modern day I mean season one. So yeah, that's what's going on.
You know, that makes me wonder. I mean, you know how I think that was during the exchange event, right? Mm-hmm. But they mentioned that he's abroad.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that at some point Gojo in the first season also says he's abroad for, like, he's been abroad for he brought like the souvenirs back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
I don't know if that was the same thing where he met Yuta, or if,
it might have been.
It would make sense, right? Like, he of course, once again, we don't know, but I think it would be kind of funny if it was that exact moment where he was abroad. And he did come back right as that exchange event happened. But mm-hmm. Yuta was still there. Like, he was, I guess he was like gonna stay there a bit longer too.
Possibly.
So
I mean, we don't know what conversation happened after that. And I think stuff like that is going to be revealed in a second season. I would say it's safe to assume that we are gonna see Yuta return in second season. However, he did lose Rika. So what does that mean for him as a sorcerer? Because he's related to Gojo, right? So he does have that sorcerer bloodline. Does it mean that he's going to be able to use other cursed spirits?
Here's the thing. I think that at this point, we don't know what he's capable of in terms of, like, maybe he's got, like, you know, Shikigami as well.
Thing is, we know he's incredibly powerful because it's stated.
And also...
During the tournament arc that he took on all of Kyoto school by himself.
Exactly. And you also see him, like, when he's with Miguel, he has his sword around, so he's definitely always ready for some ass kicking. So yeah, I don't think he's like gonna retire anytime soon. And again, I'm like, I haven't read the manga. I don't know what's gonna happen. But like, I think it's very likely that I do hope that we get to see more of him. I'm really excited to see more of him.
I'm 100% sure we're gonna see more of him. I will say this though, his sword broke. So the sword that he imbued with Rika's energy broke. So it makes me think that if he's basically using cursed energy with the sword, that is a new sword, definitely, because the one that he used broke. But it's like, does he have another curse? Because at first he was the one that cursed Rika to begin with. So is he himself cursed in the same way that Yuji is?
Here's the thing. I don't know if it was because of Rika or because of his own power, but you remember in the movie when he had the megaphone and it was basically like a device that had the same, if not even more, enhanced power as Inumaki? Like, I think it was like the family crest or like the power thingy, like the cursed speech pattern mm-hmm. on, like, imprinted. So it makes me wonder, was that because of Rika or was that his own power? Maybe they mentioned it and I forgot. If that is...
I don't think it was mentioned. He asked Rika to retrieve it for him.
Yeah, all he said was, give it to me. And he had it then. So it's like, what if that is like part of his power? You know, like, if it wasn't explained in the movie, so it's like,
not explained in the movie. I will say this: it is explained in the manga.
Yeah. So,
although we don't talk about the manga, we're not here to review the manga, and that brings up another point in terms of my gripes. Like, so much context that you're not getting, and I don't think that in a second season we're gonna get more context. I think it's gonna have the same pitfall about this whole, you know, lack of information. But yeah, one thing that I want to know, Jacob.
Yeah.
Knowing what you know in the film, are you more hyped for second season?
Definitely.
Would you recommend it to a friend? Who would you recommend it to? Obviously, we did mention Jujutsu Kaisen, who would you recommend it to? But here's another question for you. What order do you think you should watch the film in? Do you think you should watch the film before or after the first season? And I'm going to say, I think the film makes sense to watch it before because it gives so much more context to the first season, right? You you will understand who Yuta is. You'd understand who Suguru is a lot more instead of going back and piecing the pieces together.
I don't know. I feel like a lot of times this happens where it's like you get more of a backstory with like the next part that comes out, which is a prequel. And I feel like that in this case also helps because it's like in the anime, you really get to know the environment that the school is in, and also like how they make everything work. Because like if you remember in one of the last episodes during the forest attack, Mahito basically retrieves the finger, right? Or like this fingers. I don't know if it was one or six at this point. I think it was, I don't know, but you know what I'm talking about. And you can see that the school is not as simple as it looks, because they have Tengen who literally like makes sure that the environment of the school like changes every day. Like the outside appearance changes. And I feel like for me, it still makes more sense to watch the anime first, because that way you know more about the characters. You know more about why the school is there in the first place. Of course, it leaves you like wondering like why they're so stupid. Why do they like still want to execute Yuji after that thing happened with Yuta? But still, it's like the anime gives you more of an insight on what's happening rather than like starting out with a movie. At least to me, because it's like you get to know all these characters, and I think I honestly like it when I see like characters like Maki or Panda or Inumaki. You see them that they're like what, second grade in the anime, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I kind of like that in the movie you see them as their first graders, right?
Yeah,
I like that because it like shows what they were like before. They didn't really change that much, but I still think it's kind of fun to look at.
In a sense, Panda did change quite a lot.
Yeah, but
that's what I'm saying. That's what makes me think that, to me, it makes a lot more sense to watch the film first before the anime, because yeah, the film is a prequel, but you learn so much more about these characters in a chronological sense, because after watching the film, now I'm kind of compelled to go back and watch the anime for another time. Not that it's a bad thing, but because there's so much more to think about because the film exists. So, mm-hmm. but I felt that if I had seen the film first, then had watched the anime, I think I would have a better understanding of the anime.
Definitely, but sense. I do get your point, but I also think that I feel like if anything, I feel like the best order would actually be watching the anime, then the movie, and then rewatching the anime. Maybe because you know how, like, have you seen Jordan Peele's Us or Get Out?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he basically, I feel like he does it with all of his movies, where it's like you see like everything like kind of like happening over time in the movie, and at the end there's usually always something that happens. I won't give it away for like those two movies, because please watch them. They're amazing movies. But if you like go back after watching the movie and you like think of all the things that happened in the movie that in the end really gave everything away in the first place, but people we were just like we didn't realize it, or we were like, well, you know we didn't pay much attention to it. It's like maybe they're kind of thinking the same way, where it's like, well, you've already seen the first season and the movie, maybe you do want to go back and watch the first season. Maybe that was kind of like what they were also like trying to make us do.
And if they were intentionally trying to do that, I think that's incredibly genius.
Exactly,
because
that's what I think they
now
were
more people are going to watch it, and they're going to get more money from streaming and stuff. But it's incredibly smart, because it's like, I will be honest with you, like I said, there's a lot of things that I'm going to go back and watch the anime now just so I can see the Yuta references, because when they were mentioning Yuta, I did not know who the fuck Yuta
was.
Yeah,
or Tengen,
I could
or
not,
others. Like,
and that's the thing, I could not care more about them, right? Even Suguru, I could not care about him in the first season.
Yeah, he was.
And in fact, we didn't even mention
there.
Him.
He was just
in
there.
The,
we didn't see much of him. He wasn't fighting or anything. He was just walking around.
And the thing is, he was such an insignificant character to the point where we didn't even mention him in our episode.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know. I think other than that, yeah, I would recommend it to the same sort of people as before. I will say this as well. It's interesting. Like I mentioned, the film being a romance, I think would piss off a lot of people. But I also think that if you are a fan of romance anime, give this a try, because you might really enjoy it, and it might actually get you into a different genre. So, and that's what Kunai is about at the end of the day. It's about exploring different genres of anime, exploring shows that we may or may not want to watch, but then enjoying them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that being said, Jacob, I think this has been a great episode talking about Jujutsu Kaisen Zero. We only made one Jennifer Kaisen.
Yeah,
joke,
I can't believe we didn't talk about it more.
But you know why we didn't talk about Jennifer Kaisen? Because Yuji wasn't there.
That's true.
Because Yuji wasn't there, and because Todo only got like 2 seconds of a cameo, we didn't get like the full-on Jennifer Kaisen moments.
Yeah.
So
true.
It's unfortunate. I'm a bit upset that we didn't get Jennifer Kaisen jokes in this episode, but it is
we did at the beginning.
It is what it is. We did, yeah, we did at the beginning. But that being said, thank you, Jacob, for coming
on. Thank you for having me. It was such a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Thank you to our sponsors, Japan Crate, J-List, and our headline sponsor, Crunchyroll, because at the end of the day, they helped us watch the film early, which we love Crunchyroll for that. Also, they've invited us to attend Jujutsu Kaisen screening in London. Probably by the time this comes out, the screening would have already been done. The film would have already been in theaters. You could probably already end up watching the film on streaming services like Crunchyroll and or Funimation, or probably even the Blu-ray might be out by the time this goes out. So be sure to support the legal watching and streaming of anime through Crunchyroll, our sponsor. And yeah,
and support me. Give me your credit card number.
No.
Yes.
Don't do that.
Yes, do that.
Don't be the no. Why are you asking for sugar daddies on the podcast?
I'm not asking for sugar daddies. I'm just asking for credit card numbers.
No, do not give him your credit card numbers.
Okay, you know what? Okay, he's right. Give me your Crunchyroll account.
No. Don't give any Crunchyroll. No, don't give any information. If you want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon. Go to getlifepodcast.com.
Twitter.com/JakeLawsonX.
No. Don't support Jacob.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow. Don't support him. Bish 2022.
Look. Don't support... You're asking for people's credit card numbers. You can't be doing that.
Sure.
Oh my God. Okay, is there anything else that you wanted to say now that the episode is finished?
I think there was something I wanted to say yesterday, but I forgot.
What, you forgot how Kunai ends? We asked Joe's permission.
I don't mean that. I meant something Jujutsu Kaisen related.
No, I'm not talking about Jujutsu Kaisen. I'm trying to end the episode, and you forget.
No.
See, Joe, if you're listening, Jacob forgot.
That's not what I'm talking about.
You deserve to get your privileges revoked.
No.
Joe, if you're listening to this, take away. This is going to be the last time you say stay sexy on the podcast. Joe, he forgot about it. Remember that, Joe. He forgot stay sexy.
Oh my God.
This is going to be your last time to say sexy. Okay?
I was legit. I was like, even before this episode started, I was like, I need to mention this, and I was still forgot it.
And you forgot it.
It was Jujutsu Kaisen related. It was not the stay sexy. Why would I forget that?
We're at the end of the episode, and I led you into a perfect stay sexy moment like I normally do with Joe, and you know what? You disappointed Joe.
Well, you know what? Cut it out and do it again.
No! We're not cutting it out.
This is how editing goes. Do it.
No, I'm the one that edits. And remember that.
Do it again. Come on. Do it.
No, I'm not going to do it again, Jacob. Okay. Is there anything else that you want to say, Jacob, at the end of the episode?
Stay sexy.
Okay. Thank you guys for listening.
That was such a disappointing. Okay.
Yeah. No, it was okay because you didn't say it properly from the beginning.
Stay sexy.